Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Hey, Discovered Wordsmiths of people. Before we get to the second half of the interview with Justin, where we talk more storytelling video games, just like last week, I wanted to let you listen to one of the shout-out promos. This is for my friends Christine and JP. They do the Serial Fiction Show, and they'll tell you all about it, and then we'll get right to Justin.
Hello, we're JP
and Christine,
co-host of the Serial Fiction Show. Do you like to read or write serial fiction and want to learn more? We have two podcasts, the Reader Serial Fiction Show and the Writer Serial Fiction Show.
On the Reader's podcast, we escape into a new serial each week, then interview the author to tell us more. On the Writer's Serial Fiction Show, we break the serial episode down with the author and talk craft, upping our serial fiction game together. Come get lost in serial fiction and meet some amazing authors along the way to get you reading and writing serial fiction.
So hop on over to serialfictionshow.com and check it out.
We hope to see you there.
All right, Justin, welcome to Discovered Wordsmith. It's really good to see you today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get started, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, where you live, what you like to do.
Sure. So hopefully you don't hear the garbage truck outside. Just arrived as we started talking. Yeah, I'm Justin.
It happens.
Yeah. I live in the LA area. It's funny because I always thought about Los Angeles as like just hot and flat and dry and brown. But where I live, it's called La Cañada. It's right up against the mountains, and it's just green, and it feels like I'm in Seattle almost. Not the same amount of rain, for sure, but as far as like the greenery and the hills and the trees, it's gorgeous. I love it. So we moved here about 2.5 years ago from San Francisco to pursue the screenwriting side of life, and I've been enjoying myself and not regretting it one bit. And before that, yeah, so we were in the San Francisco area, which is where I worked at Telltale Games, and did a little... couple other little stints up there. And before that, I lived this whole weird life where I was in the Marines and I did government stuff and I was in the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco and I've lived in Japan and Korea and Italy. So a little bit of all over the place and various careers. Yeah. I like to say I'm on my third career at this point. The first was dishwasher busboy. The second one was government Marine stuff and now creative.
Yeah. Nice. And we've determined that you can't have good posters or you'll have kids drawing on them.
Yeah. I have a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old, and an 8-year-old. And so at this point, it's funny because the older two never drew on walls or anything like that. They didn't put any stuff in their mouths or anything weird like that. Now the youngest, she does everything that you ever hear a toddler does, like all the stereotypes. She draws on the walls. She puts stuff in her mouth. One time we had to go to the emergency room to get a bead taken out of her nose. Why would you put a bead in your nose?
Isn't that crazy how you get, no matter what you do, they're their own people and you got to discover that. It's crazy.
Yeah, very much. But they're fun and they're enjoying like storytelling. Like my daughter tries to make up stories. And then my youngest, before she could even talk, was like opening books and pretending to read. She's going, that's a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool.
I'm doing a short film pretty soon for a class. And I'm taking some fun classes on the side to further myself. And my daughter's going to be the star of that. So we'll see how that works out. My older one, not the younger. That would be impossible.
That's pretty awesome. And I love when kids get interested in books. So that must mean you've got books around. You've got books for them to read and look at.
I also wrote some middle grade books. So I've done about 12 middle grade books, which are 8 to 12 age range. So a little bit on the high side for them so far. Except for the oldest one is about getting there. So yeah, that's under a pen name because of Amazon and the algorithm and all that stuff. Yeah.
Okay, let's start there, actually. You told me a few things that we definitely want to touch on. So why did you decide to write some middle grade books? And can you tell us what they're called?
Sure, yeah. So I read it as under Justin M. Stone, I believe, S-T-O-N-E. And that's where I started, actually, in a way. I originally started because I was reading the Game of Thrones books, and then I wrote something that was like that in a way. But my preference, my style, I could tell right off the bat was a little more juvenile than Game of Thrones. And
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And I love watching these. I'm a big fan of watching these kids' movies with my kids or by myself if I need to. I went and saw Monsters University at the theater by myself one day in LA because the family was in San Francisco at that point. And I'm like, what else to do? So it's just kind of my style. At the time, I think I'd, fallen in love with Harry Potter. I tried to avoid it most of my adult life until one day I was sitting around with some friends at a beach and they had the seventh book and I picked it up and read it and I was like, oh my God, I fell in love and I read them all. And so I was inspired. So I wrote a few middle grade books to start off. And I'd say they were finished before my fantasy was ever finished because the adult fantasy took me a lot longer to do, 6 years overall versus these a little bit less so. But yeah, to that. And then also because I knew I wanted to have kids someday and I wanted to have something to show them. Like they might not be able to read that other stuff until they're 18 because some of the content's a little intense. But these are things I can show them and be proud of.
And I love you mentioned because you're a little more juvenile and that's funny, but really I think what you did was discovered your style and what genre you fit in the best. I went through the same thing. I was trying to write several different things and nothing seemed to be any good. It just didn't sound right. And then just talking with Jay Thorne, he's hooked us up. Talking with him, he got me to realize, dude, you're talking like middle school kids. That's what your language is. And that's what your story ideas fit and all that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, that's it. But, I can't resist it. So I know that same path.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. And it's a tough game for sure, because even if we like middle grade books, it's still hard to find that market. I found it's a lot easier to find like the adult sci-fi market, for example. The readership is there and they're easier to access. And for example, I recently had one middle grade book that I was pinging to an agent, and the feedback that came back was that like it needs to be more emotional. And they sent me an example. I tried reading this one and I'm just like, oh my God, this is killing me. It was like, every 5 seconds. And I'm like, no, if this is what they're telling me it needs to be, then I'm just going to stick to my own thing. But I think that's just about finding the market and finding the right champion for your work. You can go read Neil Patrick Harris. He has a middle grade book out there called Magical Misfits.
Yes, The Magics. Yeah,
and that one's great. I love that series. I don't know if it's a trilogy or what it was at the point, but I've read, I think, all of them. And every single one of those, I'm just like, yes, the whole way through. And that's, you read those kind of ones and they inspire you to try to write like them and you can find what you're, like you said, you're.
And I understand what you're saying about that's what the first thing I started looking at. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are like intense books for these kids. And then I'm like, wait a second. My stepson is reading Dork Diaries and a Wimpy Captain Kid. Underpants. You can't tell me everything is like super serious. Yeah. The kids that read a lot and they like to read a variety, which is nice.
Yeah. So that's, I think, is a key for everybody out there. And this ties into video games too. So the key is, like we're saying, remembering that just because you get a few rejections, that might have just been the 10 people that you queried happen to be readers who want the emo craziness, the super emotional bullcrap that bores the hell out of you and me.
Right.
But and so what I'm saying that ties into the video game world too is it's this weird situation where, especially as writers, I feel like you got to find your audience. And just because somebody hired you doesn't mean everybody who works at that studio is going to be your audience. You know what I mean? This weird thing where, like, when I was at Telltale, we saw writers just coming and going. It was like 6 month turnaround for a lot of them. I ended up being there for 2 years, which was awesome. But just seeing this turnaround is just, I think it's a good example of like they're writers. They know how to write. They got the job. It's just that their tastes, the tastes of the people who they're working with, might not fall exactly in line with them. And when you have so many writers in one spot too, it becomes this weird thing where everybody's judging each other's writing, and you get people in a room full of writers together, it's going to be very hard for everybody to just like, oh, you're so awesome, and actually mean it. I don't know if you know what I mean in that. But
and you worked on a few intense story games, so I'm sure that didn't help.
Yeah. And it, like I said, I love the collaborative process and I love working with writers, but there was this interesting way that they do it at Telltale where you just like partner up all these different writers and like you'll have four or five writers on one episode and then it'll just switch to the next episode with different groups of writers and different designers. And so you're just always remodeling yourself and trying to figure out where you fit. So it was quite interesting, like where some of them were just like great experiences and others, I'm excited for the next.
Okay, so let's talk the video games for a minute. You worked on, as you said, some of the Telltale games, The Walking Dead stuff, and a few others, I believe.
Yeah, so I started off in Tales from the Borderlands. I went on to, I think, Game of Thrones from there. Then I did something called Walking Dead Michonne, which is one of the kind of spinoffs there. And then I did finally an episode of Minecraft Story Mode.
Okay. And my stepsons played the Borderlands and the Minecraft ones. And oh, cool. I'm actually working on Michonne. I started it a couple years ago and said 2 weeks ago, I said, hey, I haven't finished that. And then I talked to you and I'm like, oh
I played it. Yeah.
Or some of it at least.
I was a writer on it. Yeah. So I played a lot more of a development role on that one. And Minecraft, it was the, I don't know if you've played this one yet or your sons have, but the Haunted Mansion or the Murder Mansion, that was my baby. It started off where they came to me and they said, we want to do a Night of the Living Dead episode. Where it's just basically people trapped in a house and zombies trying to attack them. And you're just fending off the zombies. And I was like, that's cool. But my taste lies more in this. And so we shaped it into more of this murder mansion type scenario. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, cool. Michonne?
So right there. Yeah. Right there, let me ask. You didn't write a whole story that turned into the game. How did that process work with several writers and multiple episodes? And like you said, you worked on one episode. How did all that work together to create those video games?
Yeah, so it definitely varies. So for example, when I came into Borderlands, we were doing a lot more of the writer's room stuff where we're in the room as like a group figuring things out. Similar with Game of Thrones, big brainstorming sessions on what each episode should be. And then they break it out by, okay, this person's going to be the lead writer on this episode. This person's going to be the lead writer on this episode. And then they say, okay, now you guys are going to help out that lead writer. We'll give you like two or three people to work on that with you, like that, like that. And so varies some games or episodes, like Wolf Among Us, from my understanding, because that was before I got there, was mostly written by one or two people. It wasn't in the same fashion. Like later on for the Minecraft Story Mode one, it was this fun scenario where they just bring you in the room and say, okay, you're going to have an episode of Minecraft Story Mode. You are a writer. Here's your narrative designer. You guys team up and figure it out. And so then you just go off for a couple of weeks and you just brainstorm. I don't remember if it was a couple of weeks or exactly how long it was, because this is 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But let's say a couple of weeks. And then you go into the room and you just whiteboard the hell out of it. You're just writing ideas up on the wall and coming up with stuff and going home and thinking about it some more and jotting down ideas. And then finally pitching it to a room. And then what happened from there, so we came up with the original concept, and then we pitched it to a room, and they're like, oh, that's cool. And then we went to a new room with an executive producer and some other people, I think. I forget how many exactly. And then we get more into the weeds, get into each of the beats and everything like that. And so it's an interesting concept, because at first, there's like the murder mystery version that we did where it was much more of an action-adventure version of it, where you have the mystery up front but then reveals who it is and then dealing with that and chasing each other down kind of stuff. That one they felt was a little bit too complicated. So then you get like that feedback in the room, and it's great because you're there and you're getting the feedback, and instead of just in your own cave trying to figure out things on your own, it's so much quicker to be able to brainstorm it like that. And then we did the revised version where we got back in the room and said, okay, let's see how we can make this a little more contained and all that.
That's totally different. When you write your books, it's basically you coming up with things, thinking of things, writing them all down until maybe your editor says, hey, you should maybe change this, etc. So this is completely different. You could have a completely, your whole story idea, but if there's other people that are like, that's not any fun. I don't think this is how they carry. So you have to go change that. How does it all tie together then? How do you get all the different chapters to tie into one big story when so many people are writing it?
Yeah, so that's the job of the lead writer. And in theory, they might take it over and just rewrite stuff if it doesn't flow together in some way. Or if they feel like one writer's voice isn't melding with the rest, they might just ditch that writer and move them onto another team or something. Hopefully there's a little more guidance first and hand-holding, discussing, all that stuff. But sometimes I found there were times when there was one episode I can remember, and I won't say which one, because then you could just look up the credits and stuff. But like, where I went there and I was like, I want to have some discussions, figure out what we're doing. And they're just like, no, we don't have time for that. Just go. And you're like, all right. Thrown to the wolves in that case. And if you get it right, yay. If not, let's see what else you can work on instead. Like that kind of situation. So you get a lot of that. But yeah, it's very different from writing the novels. And I'm doing a lot of ghostwriting right now, which is a fun thing that I've recently started playing with. And that's fun because what I do in this case is I get the outline from them. So it's like somebody else does all the hard work for me, in my opinion, because the figuring out the stuff is the hard part. The writing is the easy part. And then, but I'm being very selective. So I'm only taking on projects where I get to have creative freedom. And I'm telling them up front, I only want to work with you if you're open to me changing things how I want. And we can discuss, of course. I'm not going to go totally crazy on you and go out on left field. But
right.
It's great because I'm getting the best of both worlds where I'm able to collaborate a little bit and brainstorm if I want to. And they're enjoying that, the people who are hiring me. But I don't have to do all of the heavy lifting on my own. So it's a fun new thing I'm trying
to. Cool. I'm going to come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
On the Telltale story. Yeah, exactly. I think it's interesting that you were involved in video games. And it was definitely a niche type of video game that was only a couple years that was really super popular. Very similar to some of the old text adventure games or choose your own adventures. But they're not, because you still have to come up with a story with a beginning and an end. And I assume when you're coming up with the basic concept, you follow the basic story outline, building up to the conflict and your inciting event, that type of thing. So how did you work in with those particular games, the player choices, which I know did not change the story so much as it affected who says what, when, or that type of thing. So how did you work with that in story?
Yeah, and probably depending on the game and episode as well. Like there were some where it was more impactful than others. But it's very much like writing a screenplays, that kind of place at Telltale. And you've probably heard that some new company bought out the rights to Telltale, and now they're making the new Wolf Among Us 2 and other games. So that's exciting.
Oh, really?
So maybe there'll be a resurgence when those release finally.
Yeah.
Because Wolf Among Us, I think, was the best Telltale game there is. My flavor. But yeah, it's a fun process where you just get in there and you basically, depending on the project and the lead writer and all that, but the way I like to do it the best is we come up with the main idea of what the story is going to be. Then we start outlining the beats. So like we'll figure out first, you know, what the main point, probably what the end point might be. We work backwards to figure out what the arcs of the character and all that. And then we figure out what are some kind of rails that the character might go on. Like what are some different emotional paths or ways that they would deal with this? And you don't want to say happy, sad, angry. You want to be along the same line, but different versions of that. Like irate, sarcastic, something else. And then you figure that out. Then
right.
You go back to the beginning and start figuring out the big beats. And you say, okay, this is probably a good choice moment because it feels like a moment where as a player, I'd want to make a choice. Any kind of moment like that is probably a good point to stop and say, okay, choice moment as much as you can. Even if those are, like you said, just little role-playing moments where all that changes is what the next character says after you and then continues on. So we would do a lot of that. And then the magic, I think, comes as you're writing it, you're able to then go and do those callbacks. So you're like, oh, remember that thing we did that we thought wasn't really going to be a big deal? Let's call back to it now. And if you said that earlier, now you're going to get slapped, or now you're going to get your arm chopped off, or now this kind of stuff. And that's where it really starts to have that role-playing fun that I think really drew the players in, because it's those moments, for me at least, and for a lot of players, I think, where it's they know it's not going to be this huge game-changing thing where you get like 10, 15 different endings, but it's a lot of fun because little things change and the characters around you change, and you might end the game with one less character and somebody else likes you more because of that. Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question.
I'm actually in Michonne right now. I'm on the boat captured, and you had the choice to be very submissive and just, yes, okay, whatever you want, or cocky and brazen. For me, the Michonne character was the cocky, brazen one. So
I remember that episode. Do you guys still have the
I've played most Sparta of those kick? other games.
I was just saying, do you still have the Sparta kick in that episode? I wonder, I don't remember if that's still a thing, like the front push kick off the boat. At one point that was in there. I don't remember.
I think so you mentioned screenwriting that you're starting to do now, and I would imagine screenwriting is different than novels because you don't get to throw as much background character thinking, that type of stuff, into it. But how is screenwriting similar or different to writing the video games?
Yeah, so I actually started with screenwriting. I did the novel thing for maybe a half a year to a year, and then I got right into screenwriting because I love film and television. And right away I was like, I love books, but I really love film and television. So if I love storytelling, why not get into that also? So I just jumped right in with taking classes and kept going. And then I enrolled in a master's program at Johns Hopkins where they had also screenwriting and creative writing. So I was doing like poetry and creative writing and screenwriting and all that. And so fell in love. That's how it got me into video games. I presented two screenplay writing samples and they liked them enough to say, okay, let's do it, and brought me in. And in that case, the writing was pretty much the exact same. The main difference is thinking about those choice moments. And then the main thing too, thinking about player agency, things I like to think about is like, what are the cool moments? And if there's a cool moment, your hero should be doing that. And I feel the same way about most screenplays. If I'm telling a movie about Jack Reacher, I don't want him to be paired up with his Robin and then have Robin be the guy who gets to hit the button that makes everything explode. He's got to be the main character. And then also what was cool that I learned from the video games thing that worked for the screenplays too, is whenever you're doing those choice moments and you're thinking about the three scenarios, it helps you think about what's the most fun scenario there. And you're probably thinking of 15 or 20 different scenarios when you're doing three of them, because you have to think of, make sure those cliches ones aren't the first ones you come to. And so likewise, I think it helps in screenwriting a lot, because I'm thinking, okay, if I was doing this as that kind of video game, what would be the choices here? Okay, which one feels the coolest? Which one earns the most quippy response from a side character or something? And I think that's great. And so I'd say, but as far as like the sitting down and the actual writing, there's really no difference. It's the same thing. Since then, though, I have worked in mobile games, which can be quite different. And I've worked on some other games, which can be also quite different. We did a kind of a hybrid game television thing where part of it was basically like a reality show where you're watching these cartoon characters move around with AI. And then they have little interactions that you put in there that they say to you. And so a lot of the writing, like in these kind of environments, is done in Excel. You'll just have the character, their emotion, and then what they're saying. And then you try to get these like four or five line or sometimes more interactions between the characters. And then that tells an overall bigger story. But you have to think about the time that's spent in between all those interactions and what else is going on, what else are they doing? And will the player have forgotten what's going on by that point? Versus a Telltale game is just A to Z. It's a story nonstop, right? If the character stops to get some water from a stream, that's part of the story. It's part of the narrative that should be revealing the character or pushing the plot forward or something like that. Versus in some of these other style games, like mobile especially, they'll probably be happening randomly or to get more stars or whatever the mobile game gives you. You know what I mean? So it's quite different in that sense.
It sounds, though, no matter which of those mediums you're in, video games, novels, screenwriting, it still all comes down to the basics of story, the same type of beats that you got to hit to progress a story, that you're not doing something radically different all over the place. Story is story. Does that sound accurate?
For sure. And when I wrote a book a while back called Creative Writing Career, and my old boss at Telltale actually co-wrote the second one with me. And one of the big points that we stressed there was, or that I like to stress a lot, was to always have those, let the doors of opportunity be able to open when they need to. Like, so I didn't think of myself as a video game writer per se when I first went to Telltale. Like, I was doing the novels and the screenwriting stuff, but the door opened up, that opportunity, knocking and all that. And I was like, sweet, why not try it? And I loved it and it was awesome. And it, like you said, it's the same basic principles. If you're good at one, you'll probably be good at the others. There's a learning curve to switching between the three, of course. Like, screenwriting is quite different from novel writing because it's so much more on the structure and so much more on, and I don't mean following a structure to make a story, because that kind of pisses me off. I actually just got a note a couple of days ago from a reader who that's, this one doesn't follow the structure enough. And I'm like, screw off, man. Like, the structure is written by people who analyze movies but don't actually write movies. And most of the ones that are written really well might have some semblance of the structures in there, but they don't exactly follow the structure per this little checkpoint, checklist of right. 5 points here, 10 points here stuff. Anyway, so but the point being, they're like, when I'm working on a screenplay, it's so much more like that. Each line of dialogue has to be perfect and each movement has to be exactly precise versus a novel you can get away with. And that's why when I looked at the leaf and saw it falling, I remembered the way that my mom had fallen off of her bed, something weird, and it goes into this tangent. And by the time I stopped walking, I was already at the grocery store and I didn't remember how I got there, something weird. You can just move through stuff like that, right, without having to do it in the same way. And then video games, I guess it depends on which video game you're talking about. It can be one of those two or something totally randomly different. But like you said, story structure.
I was listening to, I forget the name of the book. It was about the war between Nintendo and Sega back in the 80s. And the Sega guy, Kalinske, their mantra was like, the name of the game is fun. And if the game isn't fun, it doesn't matter if the story hits all the beats or not. The game has to be fun. Same with stories. They got to be engaging and draw you in and move to the next thing. I love Stephen King stories. I've read several of them multiple times. But I can tell you all the things I don't like about Stephen King that he doesn't do very well. but yeah, the stories still draw me in. So, and if you ask Stephen King what the beats are, I'm sure he can. He's smart. He knows that. But I don't think he sits down and tries to write to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of times, like, I do looking at these kind of structures so that you know what they are and what people are talking about. And if you're in a meeting with an executive and they start referencing it, you know what they're talking about. You don't look silly. But what I find the most useful for is if I'm writing a story and I start to feel lost, there's a lot of good things you can do there. Like, sit back and just think, what's the simple emotional journey and whatnot. But if you just feel like writer's block or whatever it is that it might be, then I like to just sometimes pick those up and just scroll through and think about stuff, ask myself some of the questions that these are asking me. There's a great one called My Story Can Beat Up Your Story. And I love some of the questions that it asks in there. And so if you just start jotting down those responses, then you might just be like, oh, and it all starts clicking. But more often than not, I'll be watching like some movie or TV show that's totally unrelated or playing a video game. And then the story starts really clicking into place for me, even if it's a rom-com, but I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima, how do you say that? Which is a Japanese like samurai game, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be related in any way or have similar story, but for some reason, when you start being engaged and inspired by other stories, I feel that's when it really clicks. And the structure, it can be fun. I do think for noob writers who aren't necessarily great, I don't think I was a naturally amazing, I think I work really hard and I think I study and I think I read a lot. And so I'm a fun writer. There's like Charlie Kaufmans of the world who are just geniuses and they're going to put pen to paper and it's just woo. And they probably don't need to ever look at any of this stuff. But I do think for a lot of new writers, it is important to at least study the structure stuff so that, like I said, they know what people are talking about when they start talking about it, but also so that they don't just go off randomly and write some person walking in the woods and nothing ever happens to them.
And I've learned through my reading, writing, the same type of thing, like you just said. I have a natural feel for a story and progression, but if I get stuck or something doesn't seem right, I can look at it like, okay, where's the action and where's the conflict and where is this beat, the inciting incident, how they resolve it? And, oh, I missed this. For example, I'll spew this off. And again, I'm not a professional. I'm not a movie critic or anything, but I just went and saw the second Venom movie. And everybody with me, my family, they said, oh, I liked it better than the first one. I said, it was okay. And I was thinking about it, like, why did I think it was just okay? It's because once Carnage came out and you had Venom, they met and that was the final battle. That was it. And I'm like, wait a second. No. You need to have these two meet, have Carnage kick Venom's butt, and then they go off and Venom has to regroup, come back and win. The structure that's needed to get, and it was a short movie. They could have added that in, but I didn't feel the movie was fulfilling. And I realized why, because I have been working on learning the structures.
It's come with what we've come to expect for sure. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I need to see that movie and I'm excited. But yeah, that one, and there's actually a few good movies out there right now, but I feel like I have so much work piling up. I need to finish something so that I can reward myself.
There you go. I agree. Venom 2, if you like the first one, you should like the second. And I don't think it's really any too much better or too much worse. You know, it's about the same. But it's got a great little after credit scene.
Yeah. No, I thought the first was genius in the sense of, I'm a big fan of wittiness or just the back and forth that they have. I loved all of that. But I tend to like movies that a lot of people don't like, I've noticed, at least according to reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. What can I say about my taste? Nothing.
I've been doing some movie watching with a friend, horror movies. He's a horror movie specialist. He's watched over 1,200 horror movies and kept track of writers and directors and little notes and stuff. So he has me watching some horror movies. And I've never heard of most of these. So I'm getting a good education in these movies.
Awesome. That's a lot of fun. So Justin, I started doing some of that at one point, going through Shudder. I was just saying, and yeah, it was a different experience for me. I'm glad I don't have a friend like that because I can only take so much before my brain starts going, depression.
Right. Yeah. Well, Shudder, it looks like it has some really good shows on. I know a couple years ago it was a lame station, but they look like they've got some good stuff on there now. So I might check it out.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So let me ask you, you mentioned ghostwriting. How did you get into doing ghostwriting? And are you writing novels or memoirs or sports car articles?
Strictly fiction, for sure. Like I said, I'm being really picky. And it's actually, okay. So I'm mostly doing Fiverr. Actually, my wife is about to launch a product that I think is going to be awesome. It's called a Kuprick, Kuprick. Hopefully it'll be, it's gone through a soft launch, I think, right now. We're just getting it. So that's all for writing books and doing stuff with books. It's not going to be anything else but related to that. So like ghostwriting, editing, book covers, that kind of stuff. But how I got into it was, yes, I'm going to be doing a lot of work on that platform pretty soon. But how I got into it was, what was I doing? Oh, so I was complaining about book sales going down during a lot of my sales definitely tanked during that time. And maybe it was because the kids were home and I got less work done. And for a while I had COVID and that sucked. And like all these things, I don't know, whatever the reason being, the book sales went down. And I was like, oh my God, this is getting depressing. And so I talked to my buddy about it, and he's a finance guy. And he's like, hey, I got a lot of story ideas, but I'm working like crazy now, but I have money. How about I just pay you some money and you write my idea and we'll put both our names on there. And after I make my money back, we'll split the royalties. And I was like, oh, like ghostwriting, but I get my name on there. And so I did two of those, and those will be out pretty soon. We're excited. They're fun. I liked his ideas a lot. And I think the nice part about that too is I had somebody else putting me in check. Sometimes I tend to write too fast and too action-packed. Hey, slow down right here. Let's let it breathe a little bit. Let's give a little more description to this and that. And so I think it became a better book because of this. I actually listened to an audiobook of mine the other day. And I was like, oh, I see what people mean when they tell me I'm too fast sometimes, because I lost track of my own story. What is happening right now? So yeah, so that got me into it, because I started thinking, wait a minute, maybe I can do this. I like the process of somebody else telling me what to write, as long as I can still play within there and change things up and have a dialogue to figure if I'm not buying a certain moment, let's change it up. So from there, I went ahead and listed myself on Fiverr and Readsy and somewhere else, but I forget where that was. Maybe Upwork, but I haven't found anything on Upwork really. And Readsy, I've recently gotten one nice ghostwriting novel contract. And on Fiverr, I've gotten a few. But I'm doing a lot of other weird things too. So I have a couple video games that I'm working on with people. And so will they see the light of day? Maybe, but they're not ghostwriting. So even though they contacted me through ghostwriting service, I said, okay, but I don't want to do this unless I have a credit on it, if it's good. So I'm reserving the right to not put my name on there if I want to. But as far as they're concerned, if they pay me to write this, then they have to use my name if I want them to. And so that's a nice situation, right? Where it's like ghostwriting if I want it, if I feel like it meets my brand, if it falls within my brand. And I'm doing these other ones that are called, I don't know if you're familiar with NFTs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm writing for NFT Worlds. So now NFTs, for people who don't know, are basically digital arts that people are putting out into the world and charging money for. And it's this very weird, interesting thing. And now some of them want to have stories behind their launches. So I'm doing one that's called Elementals with a 4 instead of the A at the end there. And it's all these kind of, it's like a space fantasy, basically. It's these robotic aliens who are like robotic metal organism based creatures who are coming to Earth to save us from ourselves. And it's like this post-apocalyptic future, they're coming down to Earth to save us from ourselves. And that's a lot of fun. So I'm writing the universe for that. And we're going to do this whole, I wrote the short story. And then what we're doing for each chapter after that, that leads into the novel, is the kind of the high ranking NFT holders. They have like this whole rank system involved. They get a weigh in on what the story is going to be. So we're going to do a Telltale style, where we're going to have some choices at the end of each section, chapter, whatever you want to call it. And then that'll eventually lead up to 20 something chapters. And then we're going to publish it as a novel. So there won't be three choices each time written out or something like that. It's only going to be the one choice, and that'll end up being what the novel is. But the people who are playing along the way get the choice. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I was going to ask you, so what are your plans next? And that kind of answers what all is coming up for you. Do you think you'll get back into writing more of your middle grade? Do you think you'll get back into doing more video games, some AAA games again or something like that?
Good question. I actually just got a couple offers, which is cool for regular stuff, like jobs, like that. And so we'll see where those go. I won't jinx it yet. Knock on wood and all that. But they're fun projects that I'd play a little bit different role to than I have in the past. So that kind of goes back to your what's next question. So next is what I'm talking about, like the ghostwriting and the other. I don't know if you want to call it ghostwriting, if it ends up not being ghost, but writing for hire is a better way to say it. And yeah, looking at those kind of positions again. But I think I have two lined up, so if you check in with me in a couple of weeks to a month, I'll probably have some concrete answers for that.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. Because this will probably be a couple of weeks before it goes live. I could see what any updates are and add them to the show notes. And a link to your wife's Kuprick, you said.
Oh, great. Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, I think it's going to be a big launch, and we're going to be excited about it. So stay tuned for that.
Will do. Just it's been really great talking to you. I appreciate you taking time to chat with me and tell us a little bit about video game writing. So what would be your advice to anybody out there that would like to get into writing video games? What would you tell them to do?
Yeah, I'd say try to get that basic experience first and network with recruiters, of course. So events like Game Developers Conference, GDC, is a good one where they just have a lot of the recruiting company, a lot of the companies have recruiters there, and go meet them, shake their hands, say, hey, I plan on applying at some point. I just wanted to, you know, introduce myself, tell you I'm excited about what you're doing. And they might ask for a resume there. They may not. Either way, when you follow up like a month later with your resume, they might remember your name. They might not, but hopefully they will. And getting some kind of experience so that you're not just random. And I think there's a lot of areas you can get experience out there. There's like Facebook groups for game writers, LinkedIn groups for game writers. There's Fiverr and Kubrick and all these places that you can go on there and say, hey, I want to be a game writer. I've done this and this, and if you want to hire me. And games out there might never happen, but it's still experience you can use as a writing sample for applying for something else. And if they do happen, then you get a writing credit, and that's awesome. And that goes on your resume. So I think that's the key, is getting that, building up that resume, building up that network, and just reaching out to people and following up. Like, that's one way I did it, is I reached out to some people at Pixar, and they had moved over to Telltale. And that's how I found out about Telltale. And then I followed up with them, and it all spiraled and became awesome. So as long as you're putting yourself out there and making sure that you're doing the work and have the writing samples. Screenwriting, like I said, I think is always a smart thing to pursue because it ties directly into that. And if you don't end up using it as a screenplay, you can always use that as your outline for writing.
Very true. And with the tools that are out there, anybody can open up Word or even Notepad and start writing story. And with video games, there's so many tools that are free out there to get people started. And I think that's probably something people miss. Oh, I don't want to program. I don't want to learn all this programming. You don't necessarily need to, because a lot of the tools are very visual and drag and drop for a basic game. You don't have to create Cyberpunk 2077. You can create a nice side scroller or something like that just to have the experience. That's more important than saying, I worked on this $5 million game, because nobody's going to do that from their bedroom.
Yeah, I know somebody who was doing his own games with some pixel art and having fun. And that's one way he got into Telltale. And then somebody else who had just worked on, who had worked on, what's the name of that one? Episode, where it's one of these, an app-based one where it's choice-based. And that got him in. I think he had done it for 6 months and then met the recruiter, and that helped get him in the door because it was, they knew he had a real relevant experience. Of course, the industry is insane. It's very tough to get into. So I would also say, don't be discouraged. Before these offers started coming my way, like now, I've been applying for about 2 years while I've been doing my other stuff. Like I mentioned, the book sales went down, which is why I got into ghostwriting. But during that time, I was also looking at some jobs out there. And yeah, it's competitive as craziness. There was one job that, if you look at the resume and you look at the job description, I think, and I did the interview too, and the whole time we're just having a good time and it's great, but they ended up hiring somebody else. And that's just because it's so competitive, or maybe they just hated me. In my mind, it's because it's so competitive out there. They're going to have
we'll go with that one. I agree.
Yeah. They'll have 10 of me's, but there's like one little thing that'll be their deciding factor at the end of the day. Like, actually, there was an interview I just had recently where the guy emailed me back. He's like, hey, I love your writing sample and all that. At the end of the day, there was just one little thing that my coworker wanted from somebody, and that's why we went with this other person, but I'm keeping your resume on file and hopefully we'll be able to work with you soon. And so it's like that. Like, you never know. There's that one, oh, they were in the military. Oh, this one was in the Navy versus the Marines, and we want Navy in this game, so let's go with that. It's like just the littlest thing that you can't really control. Yeah. But I'd say just keep putting yourself out there and see what happens.
And I think that's important. I appreciate you saying that, because one of my goals is working with kids to prepare them for the future workforce. And things like video game story writing, narrative writing, that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago. So it's a new skill, a new job, but it's a real job out there. So you get parents that are 30, 35, and that's not a job they think of, but it's one that their kids could do to prepare for. So kids that are 12 can use tools and create video games and write stories. And then by the time they're 18, 20, they're like, well, I've made these video games all through school. And they've got this portfolio and resume to show people already. And that'll put them way ahead of the game.
You can even do things like, I don't know, there's like a whole community out there for RPG Maker. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's basically you make games look like the Super Nintendo games we used to play. So I went on Fiverr and paid somebody like $30 and they turned a chapter of one of my novels into an RPG Maker game. Like, I just gave her the text and stuff. And it was a lot of fun.
Where can we download that?
I never did anything with it. I was going to do the whole thing. I was thinking, because I'm trying to make a board game too, but every time I hired a board game artist, it didn't look right to me. And so I'm on pause until I can just find the right artist to do the board game. And then I was going to try to release them both together as a Kickstarter, where you get the video game along with the board game and have a little fun with that. But so someday it might
happen.
Keep
me in mind. I'd love to see that and be involved, because I've got ideas for like the one middle grade book I wrote. I have a card game idea that I want to get developed. And I've got an artist for that, so I think I can actually do it. It's a simple game, so I'm not worried about it. But
yeah, that's Fiverr, cool. I love Upwork and all these places. There's so many people that are offering their services, and just because they're cheap doesn't mean that they're bad. Some of them are probably bad and skip corners, but if you ask around, like the way I found that person who's not listed there anymore, unfortunately, was because I was talking with another veteran writer who had done it, and he was like, oh yeah, check out this person. And then I did, and it was a great product. I was like, oh, good job. So you can... You ask around, or you can just try people out. If they're only like $30, if you have some extra dishwashing money, then go ahead and try. Yeah,
I love that. I hadn't even thought about some of that, so I'm gonna have to check some of that out. I like that.
Yeah, you might not be able. Right, if nothing else, it's a fun experiment that you spent $30 on. At the end of the day, you can look at it and go, "This is cool. This is what my video game would have looked like," and it makes you happy.
I know. I was working with one of the tools called GDevelop, and it will export for web. So you can then put the files on your website and people could play it right on your website. And I was like, oh, that's a cool idea. If authors could get whoever does the cover or something to create some sprites, you could create games. And I even thought, oh, you could create the framework template for a couple different games and then just drop in different sprites for different authors for their webpage.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do it for some NFTs too, right? You put your NFTs in there and see what happens. A fun little Super Nintendo version of your story world. I think all that's a lot of fun. I would do more of the key I would also say here, though, is as a writer, don't get too distracted. And that's one thing that I think also impacted me last year. Was like, I was doing the board game. I was looking at video game options. I was looking at doing a visual novel. I just started getting all excited about all these things. And now I was still trying to do the screenwriting and trying to do the novel writing and doing everything else. So it's do too many things and then realize you're not focusing enough. on the one thing that will get you ahead.
So right, agreed.
I'd say try to pick one path and then experiment little bits here and there with the others when you can.
Okay. All right, Justin, it's really been a great talk. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad Jay hooked us up. I'd love to keep in touch a little more and find out about some of these things you're doing. That'd be great.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be awesome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thanks. It's been a great talk. I hope people got some good info out of it. I'm sure they did.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.